This is Meet the Millennials.
Hi guys, you're here with Cassie Loco.
Carl Loco.
Hi, I'm Rini Lee.
Hey, I'm Pastor Nathan from Hope Dealers.
And it's Pastor Kwame here from Hope Dealers as well.
Hi, I'm Ify Alexis Lee.
Hi, I'm Muyua.
And I'm Lola.
And you're listening to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennials.
Because it's honest conversations about things that the body of Christ is perhaps too scared to talk about.
And you young people don't know what you're doing with your life.
Welcome to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennial, a podcast that discusses our millennial matters from a Christian perspective, with me, Elena Boateng.
And me, Esther OG.
Yep. So each week we host our friends and influencers in the Premier Gospel Studio for honest conversations about faith, love, trends. We basically just navigate life together.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Premier Gospel. Use the hashtag MTM Podcast to interact with us, or you can email us at mtmpodcast@premier.org.uk. But no hate emails because they will not be received well.
I just want to read it. So our guest today is SPAC Nation Royalty, the Hope Dealers. So we have two of how many members? How many?
Seven.
Oh, really?
Seven, yeah.
Okay, so we have two of the seven members. So go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
Cool. So I'm Pastor Nathan from Hope Dealers.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Pastor Kwame from Hope Dealers also.
So lovely to have you with us, guys. Thank you so much. So for those that don't know, who are the Hope Dealers?
Hope Dealers is, I guess, like a collective of young men who set out, their mission was to set out to reach young people who came from similar backgrounds as them. Okay. Yeah, so that's legit.
How long have you guys been together?
Oh, man.
Two different times.
Yeah, it's two different times. So Hope Dealers started in 2013. Mm-hmm. And it was much smaller, and then it evolved into the seven, I would say, in the last year and a half.
That's great.
Yeah.
So your latest single's out right now, Trap Mash.
Trap Mash, you can listen to it on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube.
Is it on Deezer?
Pretty much, yeah. Deezer,
every platform.
For us older people who don't understand this, your young people English, what does Trap Mash? What is this?
Oh my gosh.
Define that for us.
Do you want to go for it?
Yeah, you can go for it. Well, Trap actually came from Take Risks and Prosper. That's literally what we defined it as. So that's where it came from, way before the song even came out. We were saying that we were going to take risks and prosper. That's the new definition of Trap. So we've now moved into at SPAC Nation, or even some of the leaders are now buying trap houses. This is where we're redefining what society would call, as we know, a trap house would be people where they take drugs, they etc. What we do is do hope in those trap houses, where we're housing people that necessarily wouldn't have anywhere else to live if there wasn't this opportunity. So there's about five or six.
Yeah, five or six trap houses.
So alongside our senior pastor, who also has a trap house in Inverted Commons, where it's not even his house. He's got about 14 different people that live with him that aren't related to him.
Wow. Yeah. The mash part is just really meaning to do something well. Okay. So you're trapping well.
But no, Hope Dealers are obviously taking over. So you've done a documentary with One Extra.
Yeah.
You have done a Fire in a Booth as well with Charlie Slough. So it's your year.
Yeah, it's been good. Year. It's been good. It's been a good year. There's a lot of, I think some of the other outlets are like Not For The Radio, we did.
Yeah.
The Boiler Room documentary.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple, I think there's like two documentaries coming out with BBC. One is going to be this Sunday and another 6-week documentary. So yeah, it's been cool. It's been interesting.
It's looking very, very good for you guys. So you're all members of SPAC Nation, which is Salvation Proclaimers Anointed Church, right?
Yeah.
And it's headed by Pastor Toby, I'm going to butcher his surname, Adeboyega.
That's correct.
Did I say that correctly? Come on now. That's John Boyega's second cousin, right?
That's
bloodline.
Right.
Bloodline. So the church is 10 years old, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got about 2,000 young people.
Yeah.
Mostly between the age of 16 to 35.
Yeah.
You've got 17 London communities.
Yeah.
So you've got them Bible
community units.
Okay. So are they actual like church services?
Pretty much, but I guess their primary task is to reach out to the surrounding community. So they're involved in the businesses around the community, the people, It's literally community endeavours. Yeah. So it's a, I guess it's a longer arm, as you know. Mm-hmm. Spat Nation is centrally based. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing. So you've got about 200 ministers and pastors, and you've created close to 40 different businesses.
That's you've cool. actually done your research,
I don't
though.
I've done
your research. Yeah.
I'm even here thinking, is it?
Is yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm like, is that right? Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, no, yeah. So you've gained a lot of recognition in the media, yeah. some of which is criticism as well.
Yeah.
Because people think that drill music yeah. and gospel is an oxymoron.
Yeah.
What do you
yeah.
guys say?
I love it. Because, you know, drill music in a whole is, and I think this is the point that a lot of people miss. You have a lot of young people who are literally telling you the story of their lives. Mm-hmm. So when someone makes a typical drill track, or what people call a typical drill track, the violence, the drugs, everything, it's already happened. Mm-hmm. They're just now telling you the story. It's a reflection of what they're currently going through. So what we've done is used the same music to give you a reflection of what we are going through, what we're seeing on a daily basis. So when people begin to separate and say there's this gospel drill music, there's nah, it's a reflection.
Interesting.
So yeah,
I know the police kind of are on top of drill right now,
yeah.
like kind of saying that it's part of the problem.
Yeah,
so we'll
yeah.
definitely dig into that a little bit later. In
definitely
the cool. as well. But Bally's in church. mm-hmm.
Bally's. This is balaclava.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Can you put this Bally's
auntie
this,
over
this,
here? All right,
this
auntie.
Essex okay. mist that you keep bringing. Balaclava.
Balaclava's in church.
Oh, pastor.
I even had to answer. I literally, it was just the other interview we were doing just the other day. I was answering this, but you wouldn't know that underneath that mask, the two people that were wearing balaclavas, they can get into any university they chose. They can get into, they could go to America and get into Harvard if they wanted to. Yeah. These people are owning businesses. They're pastors of community units. But mm-hmm. everyone at the moment in society takes things at face value. They look at something and they instantly judge. And what you wouldn't know is what's underneath, is what they do outside of just that. Yeah. And I was asking, we were doing the interview, and I actually flipped the question and asked him and said, actually, if we went on to Fire in the Booth mm-hmm. and we weren't wearing balaclavas, we dressed up in a suit, sang gospel songs, the truth of the matter is no one
yeah,
would have listened.
Yeah.
And well, people would have listened, but not the people that we're trying to attract to the church. The people that we're trying to save, that we need in the trap houses, that we need to help, are the people that would necessarily click on that thinking,
yeah.
watching that balaclava video, oh, I'm going to watch another drill, I'm going to watch Heady One, I'm going to watch
yeah,
K-Trap.
Yeah.
And they click on it and go, whoa, this is different. Mm-hmm. And then I watch it again and it's, whoa, these guys are actually rapping about church, about mm-hmm. God. Maybe I'm going to go and check this out.
Yeah.
Let me go on a Sunday and see what this is about. And now yeah. those same people are now walking to the altar call saying, I want to give my life to Christ.
Mm-hmm. So from mm-hmm. your perspective, is it just to an extent about using shock value in order to just draw attention and then
percent.
Bring the message in?
Definitely. Yeah. But you know the funny thing is, I have to add this element. Mm-hmm. It wasn't planned
that's
at
true.
All. So it wasn't like, even though, yes, that's what it's being used for now, it wasn't like we sat and said, oh, how can we really reach these guys?
Mm-hmm.
No, what actually happened was in our community unit in South Norwood, we had like a Christmas celebration. Do you remember? I think it was last year, Christmas. We were celebrating. And we had our song Paper Plans, which is the first song we put out at 7.
Yeah.
And we were going to perform it. And the guys came up to me like, yeah, we want to perform it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, why not? It's going to be fun. And bearing in mind, this is not really even a service. It's just a celebration.
So this is one of our community units. So it's not just going to be, we're going to preach the word. It's actually community endeavours as well as Pastor Nathan was saying before.
So then one of the guys told me, oh, I'm going to wear a balaclava. I was like, you must be out of your mind. No chance. And he, in the sense, it was almost like he wanted to do it like a parody to what we see normally.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, come on, man, get out of there. He's like, no, please, let me wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And bearing in mind, this is a 30-second conversation. So I was like, all right, cool, do what you want to do. So we got on, we performed the song. They were wearing balaclavas.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home, went to bed. I woke up the next morning, calls, texts. I think there had been like 500,000 views on Instagram because someone shot it on Snapchat and it leaked to where it went.
Yeah.
And that was it. So then it was, why are they wearing balaclavas in church? What's going on?
Mm.
I heard it was a church service in Fulham. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I heard it was the pastor that was wearing the balaclava.
No, someone was like, no, look, it's K-Trap. Someone said it's actually K-Trap.
K-Trap's in church. So we're looking at all of this like, bro, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were asked to come to, I think Represent Radio was the first place we went to, where we got to explain what we actually do, and that was it. So from there, we used it as that, but it was not planned at all.
But when you hear these critiques, do you just think, "Oh, look at these Pharisees," or do you kind of do you just think, "Look at these Pharisees," or do you kind of appreciate why some people might have an issure with image of a balaclava?
I'll be honest with you, it's split, isn't it?
It's both.
Yeah, it's both.
I was even thinking the other day. In fact, at the beginning, I used to think, "Oh, these guys don't know what they're talking about." Mm. But now I've got to the point where actually, if I was another foot. And I didn't come to the church and I was just seeing it from that perspective. I've never been to a service before and all I've known is maybe traditional church or et cetera, I would have a perception of it. But me being the type of person I am, I would definitely go and check it out and see what it's like for myself before I critique and judge. And
so I checked it out. I'm not going to lie. When I saw a bally on stage, a balaclava,
English,
must have been rattled.
I was intimidated. And I was intimidated because culturally, okay, if you go somewhere like a really cold country, people wear balaclavas to keep them warm, right?
Yeah.
So if I was in maybe like Sweden, that's not a thing for me. I'd be like, okay, whatever. But where in this country, culturally, we take that as robbery.
Yeah.
Like
standard.
It's robbery. So true. So I'm like, why am I in church and someone looks like they're about to rob me? Honestly, it was intimidating for me. That's how I saw it.
That's true though, and I think the connotations are important, because I was in central London the other day and I walked past an older white gentleman. He was probably about, he looked from what I could see from his eyes and stuff, like 40 years old or whatever. He's wearing a balaclava. And he was, the police walked past him. I was thinking, wow, what is going on here? But it's the connotation, because we have in our mind that it's for robbery. But also, you know, with what Pastor Kwame was saying, I think both of the sides are, is that there are some people, when they're asking the questions, even like when you came to the service, they genuinely just want to find out, they're open to, okay, what's your angle? Where are you coming from? And there's some people, it doesn't matter what angle you're coming from. I don't want to hear what you're saying. I don't care what you're doing. This is wrong. And that's what I would call a Pharisee.
And that's the argument I was even having with someone the other day. He was saying, "Oh, this is it." In fact, it was something different. We just newly ordained. We had newly ordained pastors this Sunday, but they were all wearing Louboutins.
Oh, I saw that video.
So you saw the video
on Twitter.
So I think it's got like 200,000 views. But I videoed it, and someone just literally just wrote me on Instagram message. This is fraud at the highest level.
Fraud.
So they don't know me for anyone. In fact, these person went to school with me, so they know me my whole life. All I've done is put a video up. Oh, this must be fraud. So I said, "What makes you think it's fraud?" He just started speaking. I said, and I was calm. I said, "Why don't you just come this Sunday and see?" And then his response is, "Now you do you, I'll do me." So you get those responses from people, and it's like, well, if you come and check it out for yourself, don't pull down something that is there to actually build you up as well. This could be something that could help you. You've got a business you're trying to pursue and you're trying to do something with your life. There could be people in-house that we've got in-house to connect with, and your business all of a sudden goes somewhere.
Yeah, man. Last questions on the balaclavas. So obviously you were saying the people that wear them, they get into Russell Group unis, they've got amazing jobs and stuff. But if it's about God, why can't you just proclaim God's name boldly? Why have you got to hide your face?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I think in the beginning, it started as this is... We don't even want it to go out to the world. We're just having fun, Christmas. And so to wake up in the morning, I'm seeing myself on stage in a shirt over all sorts of Instagram pages. I'm thinking, Jesus, what has happened here? But I think where we've continued it now is really because of the fruit that it's having. And when it happened back then, Christmas, New Year, we had a lot of backlash, and it was a lot of it was from Twitter, and we had a lot of backlash from Twitter individuals who were very popular on Twitter. So what really broke me was New Year's Eve, we saw a lot of those individuals actually come to church. So these are people, I'm talking, they've got 20k plus, 30k plus followers, and they're going, "I don't understand this church, why would you do that?" So they've actually come to see it. And I promise you, the sight was so amazing. I saw like 150, 200 people at the altar giving their lives to Christ. A lot of them were from Twitter. A lot of them. So then for me, it's almost like the way I see it is I'm looking at the fruit of it. I kind of go back to the same way when Jesus, there was a time when he was healing someone. And the Pharisees turned around and said to him, "But it's the Sabbath. You can't do that." And he was telling them that, no, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, type of thing. So that's when I get that, oh, shouldn't you just proclaim him boldly? Mm-hmm. I'm saying, but guys, look at the lives that have been saved here. So,
And I'd like to add on to that and use even another scripture. Paul was saying to the Jews, I became a Jew. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that particular message for the balaclavas isn't for everyone. So you said you came to the service. I'm sure on that service you would have seen praise and worship as well, as you're doing normal church.
Praise and worship was amazing.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And for a certain group of people, that's what is gonna hit them.
Yeah.
For a certain group of people, what we're saying is there's people out on the street, there's people out on the roads that are stabbing, killing, listening to drill music.
Yeah.
And what we're saying is we're not just gonna leave that generation behind.
Mm-hmm.
So they are attracted to that balaclava. Yeah. They came to service for that. I actually put on my Twitter the other day, mm-hmm. I was saying in the last interview that they came for the music, but they stayed for the message.
Mm-hmm.
They came to see balaclavas, they came to jump up and down, but then they stayed 3 hours in church listening to Ephesians 3. But they stayed.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have come at all if it wasn't for Hope Dealers.
So in reaching for people who would not necessarily have normally come to church, if that means you therefore disturb somebody else's view of what church should be, what church should look like, for you it's like, well, the end justifies the mean, doesn't matter.
Yeah, 100%, because I think Jesus himself disturbed loads of people when it came to the way they knew the gospel as. So, and not only that, but I think especially when it comes to talk about the anointing, from what I've seen in the word, the anointing is for solution. And if I know something at the moment, London is in pandemonium about this stabbing, killing, what do we do? The government doesn't know what to do.
Mm.
Everyone's confused. And the anointing is supposed to bring a solution to our problems. So for me, it's, I really couldn't, when people are talking about it, I just don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me, because I'm saying our country or London has an issue, has a major problem that the government can't solve. And almost, because I think it was, again, when Jesus was healing someone, he said, no, this, they asked him, was this person blind because he had sinned?
Mm.
And he said, no, he's blind so that I could be glorified. Mm. And sometimes we can have issues here just so he can be glorified. Mm. So it's going to take someone to rise and recognize, oh, this is a problem that we need to solve.
Yeah.
How do you respond to people who say Spat Nation is a cult?
Oh,
pastor, man of God.
What, Pastor Nathan was a pastor before me, so he was dealing with those questions before me.
Well, sometimes we do go in the back and like slit our fingers and drip the blood. Do you know what? It's the funny thing is, I think I know why people will feel that, because some of the, I'll be honest with you, some of the successes that Spat Nation are having with young people, it doesn't make sense. And when it doesn't make sense, it's better to just question it and stand against it when it doesn't make sense, especially when the methods look like they don't make sense either. But no, if you want to know if Spat Nation is a cult, the best way for you to find out that it's not a cult,
11 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Come to church, and if you can't come, go to SoundCloud. What is it, Toby Adeboyega?
Online, on
SoundCloud. Go and listen to a message and really, really get the word, get the Bible, the actual Bible. Get a SoundCloud, and just listen to it.
If you're all about kind of building people up and just helping them to know how to use money and work with money and such as that, why not run as a business sort of organization rather than a church?
Mm. Do you know, I think the best answer to that is, I've heard it said before, oh, I don't want to know about money in church. For me, that's I want to know. Like, where else? I don't want to know about money from Mr. Goldman Sachs. I want God to teach. If God is really who he says he is, teach me about money, teach me how to do it. And I think that's where the fivefold ministry comes in place. There's a lot of responsibility. Well, the Bible puts a lot of responsibility on them. The Bible, one of the fivefold is teachers. It doesn't specify what to teach, which is very interesting, but it's teachers. So I do think that it's very important that we learn about everything in the church. I'm not talking only money, I'm talking about how to deal with people. Proverbs will show us how to deal with people, who to get into business with, who not to get into business with. So I think it's very important that we don't use the Bible for, oh, it's just praying in tongues and spiritual matters. No, it's a manual for life. Yeah, so that's what I would say to that.
So in today's show, we've got quite deep already, but we're talking about youth violence in the UK, the causes, the effects, the solutions. Is the church the answer? And is SPAC Nation the church millennials have been waiting for? So just to give some context to the issue, so we've been hearing about violence, youth violence, gun crime, knife crime, all of that all year, basically. And it's kind of like, it feels like the situation might even be getting worse to some extent. So a few stats that I found in The Sun and The Independent, which were true as of like September, October 2018, so apparently the killings in Britain have risen to a 10-year high. So excluding those killed in terror attacks, like London Bridge attack, the Westminster attack and the Manchester attack, there's still a 12% rise in murders. The highest number in a decade. There were 1,299 stabbings in London up to the end of April. That's by the Met Police. There have been 89 violent deaths since January 2018, which was higher than New York, which was only 50, which is meant to be mad. And then the full number of killings or murders in the UK last year was 116, but I think we're close to that already. So it's mad. The Met Police are saying that 22 of the homicides are gang motivated. So it's quite a fair number. So there's obviously a problem. And it's being blown up in the media as well. Some people are saying that it's always been a problem, and the media are exasperating it.
So is youth violence a spiritual matter or a natural, like, practical matter? Like, which one should we be focusing on as Christians?
I like that. Is it a pastor?
No, youth violence is definitely not a spiritual matter. It's physical because it's happening right now. But how you deal with it? For years, how long has youth violence been going on? And what's annoying about it is that in the most areas that you have churches, is the most youth violence that I see in South London, Brixton, Croydon, all of the Peckham, Camberwell, all the areas that
we
see.
How many churches on the Old Kent Road?
Every single road has a church. Yet these things are going on. You've given the record of how many stabbings is increasing. So you've got to look for a solution. And all I'm saying is that at the moment, SPAC Nation is solving a solution. And it is through spirit. What we do every single day, we're praying, we're giving the word. So there's a solution there. And I think that if the Bible is correct, if all of us believe in it, then that has to be the solution. There can't be another way. It should be through the power of God. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Are you happy, Esther?
I'm still not sure.
Give another question.
We're here. So I'm still trying to understand the answer that you gave. Because I said, is it a spiritual matter, or should we be more practical? A practical matter, and you're saying on one hand, Black Nation, we're praying, but we're also doing things on the ground. Okay, so I'm just
because I think the physical comes out of the spiritual.
That's exactly
so. I think when we're spending our time in a lot of time, when we spend time in prayer in the Word, that's when ideas will come. That's when ways that we should now tread in will come. So a lot of the things that we do, it seems like, oh wow, they're really planning stuff. I'm not gonna lie to you, SPAC Nation doesn't plan anything. We can call a convention in 3 days. We've gotta sit down and we've gotta, no, a lot of the time it's time in prayer, and something will drop in the spirit of pastor. And it's like, okay, this is what we're gonna do now. And it always works. And it's not because we're somewhat special, but I think it's important to give time to listen to what God is actually saying. What's God saying? Where is he saying we should go? And then out of that spiritual matter comes what we do now physically. So that's it.
You've both come from a past of gang violence, would you say? I don't want to get my facts wrong.
maybe Pastor Nathan, not myself.
Oh really? So you haven't at all? Okay, but Pastor Nathan, you have. Okay, so what was your life like back then? Describe your life before Christ.
Before Christ, I grew up in a strict Christian home with just my mum. And I guess at a point, my mum used to shield me from a lot in terms of going out and stuff like that. I think when I got to secondary school, my eyes began to open to what was around me. In terms of, I really began to recognise the poverty that we were living in. My area, the poverty, not only that was in my own home, but that was surrounding me as well. And as a young boy, you'd see certain things and I would just want more. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think that poverty fueled me to go into certain directions. I began to start off slowly by like selling drugs and stuff. I think at the age of 13, 14.
Wow. And how did you get into that?
is an older from the area. And it's funny enough, it's a family friend.
Wow.
Yeah, so our mums know each other and mm-hmm. stuff like that. He was the first one that kind of showed me how to sell drugs. Mm-hmm. And I took it from there. And for me, it wasn't that I wanted like, oh, I need a big chain. Sometimes it was dinner money. Sometimes it was, I want the night t-shirt. I want mm-hmm. this, you know what I'm saying? So I guess it slowly started from there.
Yeah.
And then I think violence came into it when I began to be known in certain places and certain areas. Violence became really crazy. At first I knew I was in control of what I was doing. I can handle this, I can handle that. And then it spiraled out of control. When I was 15 years old, mm-hmm. I buried a good friend of mine to knife crime. And I think I think one of the weirdest things is when he died, the day that he died, we were taking our GCSEs. Mm. We were downstairs from school and we were playing around with each other. And he said, oh, if I had a knife and you were trying to stab me, I would dodge you by this. I'll put your arm here, I'll put your arm there. The same night he died from a knife. Wow. So it became very close to home. And then I had various other cases. One case, one of my friends were sentenced for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And it was out of control. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to describe it. I think by the age of 16, I'd seen all shootouts, knives, guns, drugs, everything.
And what drugs were you pushing?
don't even think I can say that. Do you know why? I've never been to prison. I've been arrested many times, but I've never had anything pinned on me.
Let's not get him.
She's put his life together. Spat Nation pasta. I can see the headlines already. Oh my god!
Can you imagine?
But we're talking at least a good 11 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. But for you, you're saying that poverty was your root cause.
100%.
You kind of saw that at home, we're not being able to make ends meet. Yeah. I need to go out there. And
it was very real. Like seeing a bailiff was a regular occurrence, mm-hmm. or being told, shh, someone's at the door, mm-hmm. type of thing. So this was very normal.
Yeah.
I think I was laughing with a friend the other day. It's like when I went to school, it was £1 a day, if that. So it was tough. Yeah. It was tough. So for me, it was just, I would go to school, see other kids and think, no, I want that. I want mm-hmm. that. I want to live like that. So it wasn't, and the funny thing is, because someone asked me this the other day, it wasn't a music video.
Yeah.
It wasn't at all. It was literally seeing someone that would come to school with £5 a day or mm-hmm. £20 a day. So that was it.
I hear you. Yeah. So that was your personal struggle, but what mm-hmm. do you think are some of the other like root causes that are causing people to want to join gangs?
It's poverty. I'm telling you, 100%. Mm-hmm. Me and Pastor Kwame speak to these people every day,
yeah.
and they just, the same way the young man is just starting his new office job, they want economic power as well, mm-hmm. but for them, because of their environment, they believe that they can only get it in one certain manner.
100%.
So when Pastor Kwame was talking about the guy messaged him and said, mm-hmm. That's fraud, or the similar thing happened to me when I think I was in Finsbury Park and I was in my car. And I was in traffic and three young boys walked past. They looked at me, they looked at the car and they're like, must be fraud. Mm. So the problem is, this is all they know. They don't think that young black men can prosper in any other way at all. That's their mentality. And that was the mentality I had. I didn't think that I could go and get a job or I could own my own business. No chance. Yeah, so.
And you're a product of your environment, I'll add on. So the reason that he would actually think that that's fraud is because in his environment, the mm-hmm. only way that you can achieve those sort of things that he's seen,
yeah.
a black person that's coming up, a young boy that's doing well, this could only be fraud, because his mind hasn't been expanded to the point where it could be anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a reflection of them, not necessarily what we're doing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But what about those that have perfectly happy homes,
mm-hmm.
like they're comfortable and they're still a part of this? You hear those stories all the time, like people say that fatherlessness is fueling this, people say that a lack of identity is fueling it as well, so mm-hmm. like people finding their identity in these mm-hmm. gangs where they have respect on the streets and so forth, that might be the reason that people are joining. Is that true?
Yeah, you know what, you have a very valid point. Mm-hmm. I think fatherlessness has a huge effect, especially when it comes to rejection, but The reason why I said the root cause is I had a couple people in my area, I had one specifically, and this young man was very well off. His mom was in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. His dad, I think, was like a football coach. Yeah. He always had the latest everything. In fact, we used to go shopping in his wardrobe. That's how bad it was. Yeah. So he had literally everything you could think of. I think by the age of 5, he was a catalogue model. Mm-hmm. So he literally had everything set out for him. Mm-hmm. Out of the, and this was a smaller area, out of the smaller area where we have maybe 10 to 15 boys, he's the only one that went to prison. Wow. Yeah, he's the only one. And for him, it wasn't, he's got everything. Mm-hmm. Everything is set for him. He doesn't need anything. He does not need to sell drugs at all. Mm-hmm. But it's, I want to be like my friends. Mm-hmm. This is the area that I've grown up in. These are my friends. These are the people I know. I want to be like them. Mm-hmm. So then if he wants to be like us, the problem that we have is poverty.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So we've kind of encouraged him mm-hmm. to come this direction, but he doesn't have to at all. Mm-hmm. So his father wasn't around. Yeah. That's another point. His father wasn't around. So there was no, I guess, person that can say to him, nah, you're not there now. You're going this way. Type of thing. And I know that a mum can do that, but they both played two different roles.
Yeah.
So I guess that can be a problem, but majorly he wanted to follow us.
Drill music, let's go back to that for 2 seconds. So do you think that it might not necessarily be a root cause, but mm-hmm. could it actually be like kind of perpetuating the situation though? Like, it could it be kind of encouraging violence mm-hmm. to some extent?
I'd definitely say that's exactly what's happening at the moment in terms of the drill music that we listen to. It definitely, that's why the police are looking at the moment. It definitely encourages a certain lifestyle. But again, it's just a reflection of what they're going through. Mm. But I think it definitely perpetuates knives, drugs, crime, etc.
Has music caused issues on the streets? Because loads of people want to tell you that it's not music. Music isn't the issue. It's not music.
I've got to say, you know, when it comes to people saying it's music that causes the issue, I don't think so. Mm. And the reason why I say that, I know it's very, I guess, controversial to say. Mm-hmm. I know the police have taken down videos. I know of one group that they have to ask permission every time they put up a video. But the issue is, again, they're just telling the story. So the problem is before this, the violence has happened before the music has come out. Mm. So if you think it was the cause of them doing the violence, no, this is them just saying, okay, we've done this, I've done that, I've done this, it's done. Mm. So the problem is, how do we stop them before it's done? So before the music, before the violence, there's the cause, that's the issue. But if you take down the videos, the violence is still going to occur. Mm. And I think when I grew up, the media, of course, wasn't as advanced. Mm-hmm. So when I grew up, social media was like MySpace and Pixel, and that was just I know you remember that. So it wasn't as advanced mm-hmm. at all, but the violence was still happening. And these are stuff that if you didn't know, you just wouldn't know. I knew of loads of guys that mm-hmm. died, went to prison, but it would have never been in a newspaper. It wasn't. But now social media is so rife. Everyone's got a camera on their phone, so everything's recorded. Mm-hmm. You can't miss police brutality. You can't miss anything. Mm-hmm. Everything's recorded. So now it's pushed in our face. Before, it was out of sight, out of mind, but now it's more in our face, so everyone wants to talk about it. But it's been happening. So my question would then be, it can't be my music that is making me go out and do a violent crime if I'm telling you about the violent crime I did in my music. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, so what is fueling the streets then? The drugs, girls, mm-hmm. what is it? Like, what is causing people to kill each other?
I know this is going to sound mad, but I think it's just their minds. They don't know. They don't, like, when you, and that's the thing, the government says, I think it's this, it's going to be drill music, let's take this down. Mm. Sit down, have a word with one of them. Mm. Just really, and when I say listen to them, I'm not saying listen to what he's saying, listen to his heart, and you'll find out that they don't want to do what they're doing. Mm. Generally, I would say probably about 95% of them, they do not want to do it. If they could, one of the questions I ask a lot of these young men when I sit down with them is I say, okay, look, you're selling drugs, you're in violence, you're doing this, you're doing that. How much are you making? They'll tell me, I'm making X amount. Mm-hmm. I said to them, okay, if I could show you how to make X amount mm-hmm. without the violence, without the drugs, would you take it? 100% I would take it.
Wow. That's exactly what happened there and with the evangelism.
Yeah, sometimes I'll tell them, okay, what if it was £1,000 less than what you're talking? I'll still take it.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to do it. No one wants to watch their back. They might. They know they could die. They've seen friends die. They've seen friends go to prison. So they know they're going to take one of two roads. So no one really wants to do it.
We've had cases. We've had cases that there's a young boy that was selling drugs in Brixton. He's only 16 years old. Mm-hmm. He just came up and told him, look, we know you don't want to do this. He wants to be a footballer. We moved him into one of the trap houses, as we call it. He's living there now. He just got offered a pro with QPR. So they don't want to do what they want to do. They're doing it again because they're a product of their environment and that's what they know what they can do.
Yeah. So Nathan, at a time, were you living in fear?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Do you know the funny thing is I wouldn't describe it as fear at the time.
Wow.
But I used to have a kitchen knife in my inner soul everywhere I went.
Wow.
Everywhere. I mean, I went to the corner shop, which is probably less than a minute walk from my house. I had to have the kitchen knife with me. And that, you'd say, oh, yeah, I'm hard, I've got to. But it was fair because I knew that at any point something could happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Definitely in fear.
But do you think in your mind at that time that you would have been prepared to use that knife?
100%. Yeah.
That's a little bit too quick.
Yeah, 100%. Because there's situations where it's kill or be killed.
Yeah.
It's so real. It's not a movie.
Is there anything exciting about it though? Like, not to sound crude, but like, is there anything like about living on the edge? Like, is there anything actually exciting about that?
At the time, I guess when you're with your friends, the adrenaline, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and you're doing it, the adrenaline. But when you really get home, there's times I've really got home. And maybe, to be honest with you, everyone won't have this. Maybe it's because I've had a Christian background and it still rings in the back of my head. Because I think I only stopped going to church when I was like 14 or 15, when I was allowed to. But when I get home, I would really think, there's times I got home and I said, you know you're going to hell, right? Yeah, so it was, but those are times away from my friends, with my friends, it's like, let's go and do what we're doing. So.
I hear that.
But at that point, did you have a concept of life? Like, because it feels like when looking from the outside in, life seems so throwaway. Like, there's a confrontation. It's not even like, let's have a like knuckles fight about it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to stab you and kill you.
Yeah.
It's
literally, I promise you, it's like living in a movie. It's just literally, my life is a movie. Anything could happen. I'm prepared for anything. I've got to get this money. And that's what you hear a lot of them. You probably hear this all the time. Oh, how's it going, bro? I'm just trying to get this money. Just trying to get this money. That's all. They don't want to be poor. They don't want it at all. So it's they don't care about. They're ready to throw away their lives for money. They don't care. As long as I can get out of this situation. And when it comes to a lot of these rappers with the violence that they're rapping, you have to understand they realize where it's taking them. And most of them that are rapping it would rather music pay them than them having to do what they're doing. So they're in hopes, they're still in fear. I'm hoping I'll make it. And if they do make it, I won't have to do violence, I won't have to do drugs, I'll be getting paid by money, like many of their friends have done.
Yeah.
So
they're all chasing the dream.
Yeah, 100%.
So is there no sense of life expectation? So there's no sense of I want to, like, they just think, okay, if as long as I make it to 18, then I'm all right.
Yeah, it's like they take every day as it comes, so they definitely don't think, and well, I can't say they, I'll replace that with I didn't think far ahead at all. I didn't think about, oh yeah, 5 years. It's just today's today, tomorrow's tomorrow, and that was it. So there's no, because now I have a totally, of course, I've been open to many other things, and I'm still in shock at the way I used to think and see life. But it was literally one step at a time. That was it. There was no...
I don't think you have the time to think about those things. If you're at home, your mum's struggling for rent, you know you've got to go and do things. You're not thinking, okay, in 5 years' time, I want to have this life. You're thinking, I need to make sure the rent is paid today. The bailiff knocked on the door. I'd make sure he doesn't come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I need money today. There's 24 hours in a day. What am I going to do to make that money?
Yeah.
So it's day to day.
But then do you see your worth in your relationships with other people? Like, did you ever think if something happens to me, my mum, like, did none of those sort of relationships kind of...
They did. So my mum cried many times for me, as well as many of my friends and their mums. But my mum also cried because of bills. So it's like, I've got to go and get this money. I've got to make sure the family's okay. I'm the oldest child in the house. So I've got to, as they would say, pattern things. I've got to make sure things are patterned. But so for that reason, I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not thinking about the way she feels, because I've seen her cry for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So I need to make sure she's okay. But I will say this, though. In that situation, I guess the only person I loved like that is my mum. I would do anything for her in that type of situation. And a lot of these... a lot of my friends, I would do anything for them, because I would know that if I'm in a situation, if I'm going to be killed or if I need money, that's who's there for me. So outside of my mum and that circle of friends, I don't see people. I don't know who you are. I don't understand you. I don't want to get close. This is my circle. My mum, yeah, she's part of that, but a lot of the things I'm doing in this circle is for her. So...
my biggest issue would be trust, though. Like, who would be my friend in that situation? Yeah. I'm like, when it's time to run, we're all running. Let's be honest. That's human. We're all running. That's human instinct. Like, no one can tell me different. I feel like it's fight or flight. Like,
no, I got a couple. We had a couple of friends that were like Rambo. They're not running. No, seriously, they're not. Literally, it's... Wow. It's a read. That's why I say it's a movie. Mm. It's literally like a movie. It's like, yeah, we're here. There's five of us. There's 20 of you, but let's go at it. Yeah, so it's we literally live like a movie, literally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you hear a lot about grooming these days. I don't know about you, Esther, but I didn't actually know that, like,
very true,
stand outside school gates looking for kids who might be able to move drugs for them.
Yeah, 100%.
You said 100%. It was one of your elders, actually, like a family tie, that got you into it. Is grooming real?
Yeah, 100%. So real. The same way we have, and that's why, and this sounds so backwards, that's why the streets are so successful. They're extremely successful because the model of leadership, they do so well. And a lot of these, young men who are selling drugs, who are mentoring other young men, they have a lot of transferable skills, a lot. And I've seen some of them run their own businesses fantastically because of the skills they were using on the streets. Mm-hmm. But it's so real.
The same way, because the same mindset you was just saying. Some of the people that have been on the roads, they've become the best businessmen that I've seen because of the leadership skills. Because it's the same way. I'll be in church. Even I'm looking at, if I'm running my own business, all I do is church Monday, Tuesday.
I'm
looking for the young boy that's coming up. Okay, is this person serving? Okay, he's an usher. Wow, this person shows up on time. This person's always here. I'm almost waiting outside the school gates, outside of the room, going, I want to give this young boy a chance.
I want to
bring him onto my business. Yeah. It's exactly the same way.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. So were you constantly having to prove yourself?
In the streets?
Yeah.
100%. When I was coming up, because it's almost like, who's got heart? Like, who's not going to run? Who's really about it?
Mm.
And ultimately, if you're really about it, you have more protection. So, I had my own... I had that older family friend. Mm-hmm. I had my own direct mentor, mm-hmm. if you like, who is called an older.
Mm-hmm.
And I had many... I grew up on an estate where a lot of the people are good... 6-7 years older than me, so because I had heart, I had a lot of protection, and that's you definitely had to prove yourself. Definitely. Sometimes we'll do things that were very unnecessary just to prove I've got heart. Rob someone for the fun of it. I know it's worse nowadays, but that was the prove yourself. Go and take his phone.
So are many of your friends still involved?
I've still got friends in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I've got friends who are out of prison, still living that life. It's sad. It's mad sad. And I've got a lot of them who are in church now with me. So I'm still working on them though.
Yeah,
they're coming, 100%.
It's hope, man. Deed and hope to the last, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely.
So let's talk about Christ now. How did you come to Christ? No, actually, I want to first hear about how Pastor Kwame stayed out of it completely.
Yeah,
so how have
this
you
is
had
interesting.
Like no involvement?
Jeez.
It was actually, it was really my brothers and my cousins that were involved in a lot of crime before I was even born. So my mum and dad actually moved out of the area we were living in, which was Fulton Heath at the time, to give my sister and myself a better opportunity. So I never grew up around it, but all my friends, etc., where I went to school, all of my friends and some of people I knew and still some of my family members were still involved.
Yeah.
But for me, I realised that the only reason they were doing the things they were doing was as a result of not having the life that I had at that time. So it gave me a different perception of things. I'll still be involved in things. I'll go with them. I had a lot of friends that were involved in that stuff. But I always knew there was a step where I can back off. I don't need to do what they're about to do. So there's been times where my friends rang me and said, look, I'm going to this party, etc. Come with me. And I've known I don't need to be there. And that same night, he's called. Well, next morning, I've seen pictures. He's called me and said, I'm in hospital. I've just been stabbed in my leg 3 times. And I could have easily been right next to him. So I've realised that I'd definitely give a... I'd love my... The same as what Pastor Neva was saying. The only person... I'd always love my mum for even doing what she's done for me. I think it just took me out of a lot of situations I could have been in.
Yeah.
I could have easily been maybe one of Pastor Nathan's friends that are now still in prison or still struggling with certain things and being maybe even being one of the people that are on Twitter not understanding because I came from a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I was taken out of it and it made my life maybe a lot easier, but easier to see from the perception of why people are doing the things they're doing as well, because I chose not to.
Yeah, yeah. It's a choice, but it's also environment.
You're a product of your environment.
Yeah.
So you can go to a private school, etc. But if you're still growing up around Fulton Heath, Croydon, Brixton, these areas, all you're seeing around you every single day is still poverty. So you can go to those schools, but you're still travelling with the mindset of poverty.
Yeah.
What helped me is that I might be in a classroom now where someone... It's weird that someone across the room is now saying, not that I just want to be a footballer or a rapper, but someone saying, I want to be a lawyer. Another person saying, I want to be a doctor. It just expands your mindset to go, whoa, I don't just have to do these things. I don't just have to be around these type of people. This doesn't just have to be my life. It just expands it to the point where I can say, there is an opportunity for me to do other things. I might not get there, but I know I now have the opportunity to. So I don't have to do certain things.
Yeah, I guess the challenge is, how do we get people who wouldn't ordinarily have access to those environments into those environments? You get what I mean?
Literally, I think that's what, and I think that brings us on nicely, but that is what Spat Nation is doing. And we talked about fatherlessness earlier in the show, and you can have a dad, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a father. So there's a lot of people that have had dads but haven't had father figures. When I came into Spat Nation, mentorship is at the top of the list. There were 5 or 6 big brothers, I'll call them, 5 or 6 fathers that were looking at me going, this one I can mold, this one wants to do this, and let me show him the seven steps he needs to take so he can achieve this. I'm now living in a house, a trap house, so to speak, with one of my senior mentor, which is Pastor Samuel Kokia, who runs Credit Connect Community. Every single day I get to see how this man lives his life. I've seen him go from prison, what, 7 years ago? He was in prison for 2 years. He came out 7 years later. This guy now runs a business which is turning over £50,000 every single month.
Imagine
if someone didn't take a chance on him, if someone didn't take a chance on me, there wouldn't be the people that are behind me, etc. So doors have to be open for you to know how to open a door for somebody else. You got to be given the key.
So how did you both come to Christ, and why is it stuck?
I came to Christ. Oh my God! You know what?
It's gonna be a story.
Oh, yeah, because we've got a story.
Yeah, because it was so funny. I was in Croydon. And at the time, to be honest with you, I was really desperate for a change because at the time I didn't know it, but I probably would call it depression because of the case that I was on that my friend went to prison for. And a familiar face stopped me and said, oh, do you want to come to church? I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't been there for a minute. And to be honest with you, I went because I know there are nice girls in church. That's what I went.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Heard that one a few times.
So, yeah, that's what happened. But, yeah, I went to church. I heard the word. I was like, wow, this is crazy.
So what church? Was that SPAC?
No, it wasn't SPAC. Okay. Definitely not going to church. but to be honest with you, when I went to that church, I went there and I was willing to do whatever because I was just desperate for change. Like, I've seen so much at this point. I'm just like, I need something. I need a lifeline. I need something. And at the time, one of my friends was on life support because he'd been stabbed in his heart. And I'm just thinking, child, I need something. I need a lifeline. So I went to that church. I started going. Anyway, when I started to realize, oh, this is what God is about, I made a move to Spat Nation in 2015. And from there, it's everything that I was looking for, because even though I was desperate, I started getting into the tradition of church. You know, there's a tradition. This is how we do things. This is it. This is that. This is this. This is that. And it's not really centered on the ministry of the kingdom at all. It's just this is the tradition of church. So I got out of that and into Spat Nation. Yeah, but ultimately it was someone just inviting me to come. That was it.
Yeah. And I guess that's why you guys are so hot on evangelism, right?
100%. 100%. Because if that, if that person never spoke to me, I don't know where I would be today. I don't even know if I would be on earth. Mm. Yeah. So it's mental.
But was it easy to make a clean break though? So when you started going to church,
it's difficult.
Like, yeah,
no.
I'm done now. That's my old life.
No, I had a lot of pressure. Mm. I guess the one good thing, and I think God did this for me, is that I grew up in Peckham. Mm-hmm. So when I started going to church, I was living in Croydon, which is a good distance from my area. Yeah. I don't think I could have done what I did living in Peckham.
Okay.
So that helped a lot. But that's really what helped. Mm-hmm. That's definitely what helped me. Yeah.
So fast forward to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
What are you both doing now?
So myself, I run a cryptocurrency business, teaching people how to trade and invest in both Forex and cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. So it's an educational platform and also a hedge fund as well. We take on money and actually build client portfolios and make them money as well.
Mm-hmm. I trade cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to Pastor Kwame, and I run a recruitment consultancy. A local recruitment consultancy which our main focus is people aged 16 to 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and getting them into work.
So you're both black men who are professionally established.
Yeah.
But when you read about these murders, I think at least half of them are black men.
Yeah.
Why?
It's not... I think it's the mindset. I think one of the greatest things Spat Nation has been able to do is to show young men an alternative.
100%.
Or young women, an alternative. And that's what I think I was saying in the beginning. They just don't know. A lot of them don't know that you're capable of doing this. I said to you before, I didn't have a clue. What I'm doing today, I couldn't even dream it. So, they just don't know. So I think a lot of them that are in these predicaments, once given the right opportunity, once given a hand, and sometimes, to be honest with you, I know we do use money for a lot of these things, but sometimes it's not even money. For some of them, it's just offering your hand and saying, bro, come with me.
Mm-hmm.
For some of them, and Pastor Kwame, if you remember, a lot of them, we take them to certain areas.
Dorchester.
They've never been there. They've never been to Dorchester Hotel. They've never been to Mayfair. They don't know what it looks like. So they come there and they're like, wow. They meet their counterparts, who's another 19-year-old guy from Dubai, who's bidding for a tower.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of opening their minds to opportunity, to an alternative. And they grasp it with both hands.
Yeah. And young people just want to, even when you're young, whether you're on the roads or not, you just want to be like ahead of your peers. So the reason we want the latest Jordans is because you want to be the first person to get them.
Yeah.
So when you take a young person to Dorchester now, instantly, well, what we did with the young boy that used to be selling drugs in Brixton, as soon as he comes out of that, he's now gone Dorchester, he's now gone all these places, and then you go back to your area and people are selling drugs, you already feel like you're part of an elite group. So you naturally, I don't even want to be around these guys.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm on Snapchat.
Yeah.
And that's how it starts. You just got to show them something and they got to believe in something and then help them on top of that as well.
Mm.
Respect what you're doing. My only criticism, to some extent, is consumerism, I think, is a root cause of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that people want,
yeah,
especially in the black community,
yeah,
dare I say it,
yeah,
I feel like when you take someone to the door, it's not, no, I don't actually, let me put that, let me park that. When you show Lamborghinis, yeah, Range Rovers, yeah, in your music videos.
Oh, yeah.
And you let people know that this is accessible to you. Good. Yeah. There ain't nothing wrong with none of those cars. If you've got it legit, great. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? But at the same time, are you not fueling what some of the problem is? Because people want the cars they're seeing, you know, the most elite on the street driving, they are going to push drugs harder and so forth and so forth. Do you, because when I went to your church, I just imagined, whoa, like how much inequality might there actually be present in the church? Because there's some of you that can drive a Lambo and there's other people that might be in their Ford. Do you have to like feel it. Some type of way about that? Like, do you have a responsibility for that?
Do you know what's funny is that I actually think Spanish is doing it the complete right way, because I've been to church where it's just hope. I know we're called hope dealers, so we do hope, but at the end of that, we're actually helping people as well. And I've been in church where all it is you can do anything you want, you can achieve anything you want. I think it's the silliest thing to tell someone they can achieve anything they want without being willing to take them by the hand and show them. And that's all I was. It was just a carrot dangled in front of my face that I can achieve. But a year goes by, 2 years goes by, and my life hasn't actually got any better. Where I've come to Spat Nation and hope is still dealt, but my life is actually getting progressively better every step of the way as well. So it's not just the pastors that are driving Lambos, but I'm seeing young men at my age running businesses that are also driving Audi R8s, that are driving Lamborghinis. All those cars don't just belong to pastors. Some of those are ministers. Some of those are ordinary members that are running businesses as well. So the cars that you see in all of the music videos are our cars. So it's not just the pastors. It's everyone is prospering together. And that's the difference.
And I think in terms of consumerism and making people want more, again, there's a very specific audience, but a lot of these young men, when they're out on the streets, this is what they see their elders doing. So for them, I have to tell you, and this is not me being disrespectful in any way, but if I look at their elders, the typical church, uncle is wearing Jesus sandals, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I went there. White socks. I definitely went there. They don't want to know. I don't want to know what you're talking about, because my older just bought an Audi. And it's not even something fantastic. He just bought an Audi A5. So uncle and your micro, I don't want to know your Jesus. Because you know the problem for me, honestly, I used to sit in church, and because remember, I went to a very Nigerian church as I grew up. I used to hear all of the jokes, all of the stuff. I didn't understand it though, bearing in mind. But I came out of that church thinking, but pastor, I don't believe what you're saying, because it doesn't look like it's working for you at all. Maybe I'm just fickle, but I can't see it. And so for me, that's what happened with the typical church. And a lot of these, they don't want to know. They don't, because their older or whoever's on the streets mentoring them is trumping whatever you guys are doing in church. So for a lot of them now, they see it and they're like, this is weird. Is this church? And they're intrigued to come, as I think he used the word, dangling a carrot. They're intrigued to come and look. And when you come, you're just going to receive the pure, undiluted word, which makes you, it's almost like you're caught in it. You've received the word now, and you're like, whoa, I didn't know, like, this is the word. I didn't know that I'm allowed to do well. I didn't know I'm allowed to, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I know at one point there was a very humble poverty doctrine that was running around, and that's not trumping consumerism, because there has to be a point with all of us. There has to be a balance where it doesn't consume your mind. And for us, I think one of the things that rings for me always is that when it comes to money, it's rather that we use money as a tool than money uses us. Because the thing is, you can show all of this wealth, you can show, oh, here's this car, here's this money, blah, 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 blah. By the end of the day, I think for us, we raised something like, 400. No, I'm talking even this year, I think it's like 1.5 million pounds 100%. That we've raised. And that's for the work of the gospel. So the thing is, I know, as well as Pastor Kwame, when it comes to giving, I am reckless, absolutely reckless when it comes to giving, as well as a lot of my friends, a lot of the ministers, a lot of the pastors. And it's purely because we use this thing as, this is a tool. Go on an errand for me. Go and do this. I need money to go and do this for me. But if it was the other way, I'm going to want to, I need to hold on to it. I need to hold on to everything that I got. Which, again, I'm going to throw another bomb in the water, is what a lot of our aunties and uncles did in the previous generation. It's, no, we've got to save to buy a house. I'm like, no, how do we push this gospel? I've got 10K. It needs to go offering now. Because there's this need, there's that need, there's this. So I think that's the angle we're coming from. But you wouldn't see that if you just saw the Lambo. Someone actually has to explain that to you and say, actually, this is what these young people are doing. Yeah. I was talking to, I want to give you a good example. I was talking to a young man. I'll give you the 18-year-old. A young man, he was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. He started doing stuff and making money. He was given £1,000. And he was just so excited to give. Mm-hmm. And that's the culture. The culture is, bro, we don't hold on to these things. The one thing that Pastor Toby said to me, and I think this was maybe 3 months of me coming into church, is that we don't buy anything that we wouldn't let go of in a twinkle of an eye.
It's just what to do. Yeah.
So
you judge a man by how rich he is, but not how much he has, but how much he gives away. And that's what we're the biggest givers. So in a heartbeat, those cars, the Rolexes, all of it would be gone if we had the vision to actually put it into something and actually go and do with it. And that happens daily, weekly. Yeah. I've had conversations with people that have literally sold their cars just so that they can give into this vision, etc. So it's not about amassing things and showing off. It's literally about, no, we've given to a point where we have these things now and we own them as well. These are ours. Mm-hmm. And in an instant, we could give them away.
Yeah. I love what you said about the word, because I think if you're not careful, the entertainment, the music, the cars, everything, they'll bring people, but they can't sustain people.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
110%.
Definitely.
Like, the word is going to, is what's going to sustain. Kind of so thing, true. Because year on year, how are you gonna top that? Like,
yep,
how
yep,
many
yep,
more
yep.
songs can you make?
Exactly. How many more cars can you buy? Once you've got an aeroplane, what's next? Yeah, yeah. It's true.
What's your
character saying? Yeah, so at the end of the day, like, the word to me is the most important. Mm-hmm. As long as people are going there, they might go for the car, but they have to be hit by the word.
Yes, 100%.
So that's the only thing that's going to stay.
Do you know what's funny about that as well? People that only come on a Sunday, you wouldn't know that on a Monday.
Yeah.
Actually, this week, we've been in the word Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yep, Wednesday.
From like 6 p.m. to midnight.
Yeah.
But people so you've even missed the whole week if you just came on the Sunday.
Yeah.
You haven't even known that we've just been praying in the
world. Do you feel like you have a responsibility as a church to reflect that? Because you're in charge of your social media and how you're presenting yourself to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So if all people do see is hear more about the Louboutin, I can't even say it.
Louboutin,
all these fancy things, I don't even know. Then do you feel like you have a responsibility in terms of how you are publicly presenting yourself?
You're absolutely right.
If I only do come on a Sunday, which is when most people go to church anyway, what do I do then?
And you know, you're so right, but you know the funny thing is, Spat Nation has been putting out so many videos, and one of the things I say to people is go on a hunt of Spat Nation's videos. You'll find that we have way more prayer videos, way more sermon bites, blah, blah, blah. But they're not popular. You'll actually go on Twitter, go on Instagram, you'll see it all there. But it's not, the one that's got the views is the Louboutins, the Lambos. But if you got, it's actually there.
Every day we're posting Periscope.
Literally.
So we're online.
So SoundCloud. Pastor was on Periscope about an hour ago. You guys wouldn't know about it.
It was on Twitter, it's out there. It was everywhere.
So we're praying on Periscope, but you wouldn't know. Yeah. So,
okay, last two questions.
Cool.
What advice would you give to someone that can't see a way out of their life?
The advice that I would give them is there's definitely an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And my way of proving there's an alternative is my own life. That's what I rap about. I'm trying to show you through me, I look like you, I look the same as you, there's nothing different, I don't have special powers, but there's definitely
maybe
but there's definitely a way out. But and I would definitely ask come and see, literally, because I'm not asking you to go in a mountain and try and do something yourself. I'm telling you, we'll grab your hand, we'll take you there. So that's amazing. The
last question, I'm going to direct it at Kwame. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone that wants to be a part of the solution but doesn't know how?
That wants to be a part of the solution?
Yeah.
Whoa. Well, just come and join. I think we're already doing it. I think we need all hands on deck.
Mm.
All hands on deck. It's not like we've got the... I think Spat Nation, we're not saying we're the only church, we're the solution, mm-hmm. but we're definitely part of the solution
mm.
because there's lives that are being changed. So if there's anyone that can help and say, no, I've got this contact here, I can help in this way. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've got a lot of, I would say, the older generation that are really supporting our movement.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
That we need more of those people around, people that are going to push this as well. Definitely come on board. We need it, all the hands we can get.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you guys so thank much. You. Thank you for being honest with us. Thank you for your advice, everything. We wrap every show with a scripture.
Okay.
And I feel like a scripture that really embodies your lives actually is 2 Timothy 2:26. It says, "And they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after wow. being captured by him to do his will."
Wow. That's powerful.
So what do we have to look forward to from Hope Dealers and Spat Nation?
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot more music. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot more videos. The next video, music video, is very explanatory. Mm-hmm. So it explains a lot of the movement. So I can't wait for that one to drop.
But the one after that, a lot more controversy.
Yeah, a lot more controversy. Oh, yeah. So we've got to balance it. We've got to balance it.
Balance.
But yeah, Spat Nation is... we're doing a lot, and I guess it's always going to be the same. We're trying to see as many young people mm-hmm. Serving God, loving Jesus, out of poverty, but literally they love God with all their heart. They are the epitome of holiness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking to do, and we're just using every angle. So that's what's coming up.
Guys, thank you so much. That's another thank Meet you. The Millennials Wrapped. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Follow us at Premier Gospel with the hashtag MTM Podcast, or send us an email, mtmpodcast@premier.org.uk. Do you want to close us out in prayer, Esther?
Yes, Lord. Heavenly Father, we do recognise that there is a massive problem with youth violence. We know that that's close to your heart. That is very close to your heart because you created each and every single young person out there, Lord. So I really do pray that you will continue to give the church and the countrywide solutions and help us as Christians to really place it upon our hearts to care enough and be pushed enough to actually do what we can to bring solutions to these problems, Lord. I pray that you fill our hearts with compassion and that you will speak to every single young person that is involved in that lifestyle, and you will let them know that there's another option, Lord, that you will reveal to them your heart and your love for them so that they can in time come to you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
This is Meet the Millennials.
Hi guys, you're here with Cassie Loco.
Carl Loco.
Hi, I'm Rini Lee.
Hey, I'm Pastor Nathan from Hope Dealers.
And it's Pastor Kwame here from Hope Dealers as well.
Hi, I'm Iffy Alexis Lee.
Hi, I'm Muyua.
And I'm Lola.
And you're listening to Meet the Millennials, the voice of the Christian Millennials.
Because it's honest conversations about things that the body of Christ is perhaps too scared to talk about.
And you young people don't know what you're doing with your life.